Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey friends, so Facebook started this supporter option for creators on Facebook, and they reached out to us and asked us to try it out. And we have, and it's super fun.
Dude, it's been amazing. All this content that, you know, we always want to do anyways, but now we really get to do it and share it with our supporters. It's exclusive content.
It is.
You know, I do a Motivation Monday. You do Thirsty Thursday.
Yep. We share backstage stuff from tours. We shared a poolside chat that we had in a pool in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, it was hot.
Just stuff like that. And, you know, we try to give out a lot of content across social media. But there are some of you lovely folks that, you know, want more. And so this is for people that want to see more behind the scenes stuff, more lifestyle stuff, more things that are just kind of in the recesses of our brains.
Yeah,
that are
and we just released a song.
We just released a
song. For supporters,
so
which is amazing.
Supporters are the first to see it. Supporters get a permanent discount on Stone Cold and the Jackal merchandise. They get to be part of a private supporter group so that they can all talk to each other and talk with us. There are so many benefits to being a supporter. And if you're so inclined, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, go check it out on our Facebook page. There's a blue button. Click Become a Supporter and check out our new song. That's awesome.
That's awesome. Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's really awesome.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. DBB.
What up?
Yo.
Bradford.
Buddy. Man, oh man.
Hey.
It's another episode of That's Awesome.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
Yo. For our East Coasters, how you doing?
Speaking of East Coast, well, I mean, our guest
what
is
about
from
the East Coast?
And we're we'll get to her in just a second.
Yeah, we're stoked on this one.
Oh, my.
Yeehaw!
My gosh,
that
guys.
Was a very East Coast-ish.
Yeehaw?
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's what the sound they make on the East Coast.
What do they do?
Well, it depends where on the East Coast.
There's a lot varied.
You can't put us in a box, bro.
No, don't put us all in a box.
Well,
listen, Jersey and New York, I know it's separate, but there's a lot of similarities.
Right, but then you get the Carolinas.
We're not worried about New Hampshire.
I said the Carolinas.
I know, but you're going to get up there, and we're not worried about your sweater vest and a freaking pipe, okay?
I know.
I'm talking about
Jersey and New York.
I'm talking about...
Can you imagine me with a pipe?
Or vaping?
Oh, gosh. Hey, kids.
Don't vape.
Hey, all you kids that listen to our podcast, don't vape.
That's no one. That's no kid. No kid ever listens to our podcast.
Today's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by Juul. No.
Yeah, no. Well, that's a grocery store in Chicago. So,
oh, is it?
Yes.
Is it?
Oh, Juul, okay. Osco, yes.
Yeah.
I lived there for a little while.
No vaping for anybody. My goodness. And also, you know why? Because there is nothing more disgusting in my estimation.
There's probably something more disgusting.
Well, first of all, I don't love other people's secondhand smoke. We all know secondhand smoke is bad. But, secondhand smoke, it dissipates quickly when people are vaping, there is a huge plume.
Yeah, it's like Cheech and Chong. I'm in traffic and I see a cloud of smoke leaving
all
this.
Sudden,
I go, how is that safe?
Well, and also, like, if you're walking behind someone that's vaping and all of a sudden there's just like this huge, like,
vape juice
smog of exhalant, something that was inside their body cavity that is now existing in your airspace.
For a germaphobe, that's not a good thing.
Oh my god! And your first instinct is like, oh, that smells sweet, like almost like pipe smoke, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If it's like like strawberry flavor,
sure.
You're like, wait a second, that's been inside someone's gillet.
What? Their gillet.
That's just not good.
Is that a word?
I don't know, bro. It just sounds right. I just like,
dude, you're making jackal words up
the
now.
The base of the, I'm just like, ah. Like, it's no good, dude. It's
you got to throw that. You got to try to get gillet in on GH.
Gillet.
Yeah.
Gullet.
We should check his gillet. I go, dude, what's that?
Gullet? I think it's gullet.
I don't know, dude.
Man.
That's funny, though.
Anyway, I just don't want, I don't want your plume, bro.
I don't want your freaking gillet juice on me, bro. I don't know, man.
Amazing. Oh, well, now that we got that out of our system.
Yeah, let's get that out.
We have an amazing, lovely guest today.
She's awesome. Is that an exciting sound?
It's an exciting sound.
We have an amazing guest today.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing guest.
Ever. You guys are so lucky that we get these people for you, and we're lucky too.
We're lucky, and she's very generous to do this. So
indeed. Indeed.
We have the great and wonderful Jackie Zeman with us today.
Come on.
Oh, you men, you're making my day. That's charm just oozing out
Come
of
on.
These two wonderful people
yeah,
in this
that's
room with
it.
Me.
So I didn't have Jackie's number, right? So I think
it's a tough number to get, I hear.
Yeah, it is tough. It's tough. It's tough, especially in this day of technology. You think it'd be easier. I can't track her down. I don't know.
Did you look in the phone book?
She has like a burner phone.
It's the same number I've had for like 25 years because I'm not good with numbers. So when I get one I can remember, we're done.
So
amazing.
So I had to text Ken.
Oh, that's a fool's errand.
Of all people, I'm like, who can I get Jackie's number from? But anyway, Jackie, thank you for sitting down with us today. This is amazing. We have so many questions for you.
Indeed.
Thank you for inviting me. I was really excited about doing this with
yes?
you today.
Yes. Have you ever done a podcast before?
I have.
Yeah, okay.
But not a lot. Just,
okay.
You know,
sure.
We're not.
We're,
our feelings aren't hurt. That okay. we I mean, it's always exciting to be somebody's first, but we don't take
yes.
it personally.
No, we do not. Go ahead, dude. I know you have a lot of
questions. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so.
Usually he has all the, he wants to get into the, dig into the personal life
okay,
first.
So we always like to start kind of at the beginning and figure out, you know, where people are from and how they found their way here. So where are you from, Jackie?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm from Bergenfield, New Jersey.
Bergenfield. Oh. I've heard of Bergen, New Jersey, but not Bergenfield.
It's in Bergen County.
Bergen County.
Nice.
Yes.
Ah,
I see. Okay, right. So
New Jersey, huh?
New Jersey. And it's not far from the George Washington Bridge. You know,
sure.
It's right on the suburbs of Englewood. I was
yeah.
in Englewood.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just whop over the bridge and you're in New York. So.
Totally, yeah.
So did you kind of spend your childhood going over into the city a lot?
Yes. Well, I was a dancer when I was young. So
just like
I started at like 11 getting on the bus with my friend Phyllis and we go into New York and we take dance classes with
amazing.
You know Luigi Lewis and you know ABT American Ballet Theater and Rhett Dennis and JoJo Smith and
wow.
Peter Gennaro.
Oh my gosh.
We had a great teacher.
So when you were getting into dancing as a kid, was it just like, "Hey, I'm a kid, I want to dance," or was it already thinking like, "Hey, I want to dance and maybe I want to dance in shows?" Or like was it just for like activities, or was it specifically pointed towards, hey, I think I want to be a part of that?
Well, my mama would drive me to dance lessons, like,
yeah.
you know, pretty much five times a week when I was a kid, just because it was fun. I started very young.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And it just, it progressed, you know,
yeah.
I didn't, when you know, when you're five or six,
right.
that you
yeah.
don't really think about if you're going to earn a living.
Right, okay, great, yeah.
But I remember
I
dancing around the living room, and then when I would turn like nine, I remembered I would round up all the kids in the neighborhood and choreograph shows. Like everybody
Amazing.
Would, we'd have block parties. We lived in a really wonderful neighborhood where, you
yeah.
know, we'd block off Catherine Place, the street, and we'd have parties, and, you know, the grown-ups would come and pay like 25 cents or something to watch the
you
kids
You charge
all dance.
The grown-ups,
yes.
I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, we had to pay for the costume, you know, we had
oh,
I had
oh,
some
wow.
costumes from the dance recitals that
yeah.
had to get passed around. My mother sewed, so she made sewed costumes for us, and it was really fun.
Oh, were your parents
little entrepreneur? I love that,
and she still is, by the way.
Love that,
and that hasn't stopped. Were your parents in the entertainment business at all?
No, nobody was ever in the entertainment business, so
yeah.
I didn't know anything about it. I, you know, auditioned for the plays in school. I was in all the high school plays, and fortunately got the lead role, so I was very
oh,
lucky,
wow.
which was really, because I loved it.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Martin Winkler, Marty Winkler was our head of the drama department at Bergenfield, you know, school system when
yeah.
I was in, and I just loved getting to do that. And in and out of New York, and then I was given a dance scholarship to NYU when I was 15 years old.
Oh, my
wow.
gosh.
So I went there.
How did...
So yes.
There.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
How does one, as a 15-year-old, get a scholarship to go, like, 3 years later? Were they recruiting dancers? Or did you go to college at 15?
I went to college at 15.
Oh, okay.
I had skipped, a couple years. In those days, they didn't have, like, the pre... college courses like they do now.
Yeah.
But I was on an independent study program.
Oh, okay.
Because
okay.
what would happen, I liked to read. So we'd get the book in the beginning of the year and I would read it and I'd go to the teacher like in a month, I'd go, can I have the next book? And the teacher would say, that is the book for the year. And I'd say, well, I'm done with it. Can
oh.
I have, you know, the next one? So I ended up
yeah.
getting a little ahead scholastically, which was fun because it gave me time to be in the plays, be in the
sure.
drama department. My girlfriend Phyllis and I opened up a dance studio in her house and we were teaching kids in our neighborhood.
Wow. So dancing
seems
like...
Was that school a public thing or was that a private thing?
Well, it was a private thing, but all of the kids in the neighborhood... Like, the moms all knew us because we had been in dance shows and recitals, so they all sent their kids to us after school, and they'd pay us.
Oh, wow.
You know, money to teach them after school. And we were, like, 13, 14 at the time, 15. Yeah. And it was fun. You know, it was just,
that's
it was
great.
Fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, so then you're in college at 15 in Manhattan.
Yeah, they were, NYU was at the time was starting up a new dance department. Richard Bull was in charge, and they were just trying to get new people in. It was really fun. Phyllis and I had done a performance at the Garden State Art Center, and they have spotters for dance, just as they do in sports.
Oh, sure.
So spotters came and saw us, and that's, I think, how we got invited to audition.
Wow.
And we auditioned. Phyllis and I, we both got in. We were there. We were in NYU, you know, dancing. It was really fun. And I went there for only 1 year. And then moved to Caracas, Venezuela, and I was a dancer in South America. Well, so I worked down there.
How did that come about?
That was a detour.
Yeah. Well, you know, dance, it was a complicated thing because dance, you only get, you know, you get your good 10 years or something, and then you either become really famous and become a choreographer or you find another business.
Sure.
So I wanted to dance. I mean, I really enjoyed it. So I went down to Caracas and with Jill DeMolette, who was a principal dancer with a New York City Ballet.
Okay.
And I was very young at the time.
Yeah.
And my parents were like, oh, I don't know if we should, you know, let men.
So you were like 16, 17? Or?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's tough.
And But Gilda was 24.
Okay.
So my dad said to my mom, we have to let her go, Rita. If we don't let her go, we're going to lose her. She'll either go anyway or she'll end up, you know, not wanting to confide in us anymore.
Right.
Sure.
So that was that. They let me go.
Wow.
And how long were you down there?
Well, that's another story. So we
That's what podcasts are for, Jackie.
Yeah, yeah. We go down to, you know, Caracas, Venezuela, and we're dancing. And I didn't know at the time. We went down on a tourist visa, which was good for 3 months.
Right.
Except, what did I know? I had never been
overseas
before.
Was it to be part of an existing company that was going to just hang there, or is it to do, like, one show?
No, it was to work in a club.
Oh,
and we were choreographing routines.
Okay,
And, you know, doing shows in this club. Right in the city. And we get down there and the visa, what do we know? We weren't, and it wasn't like we were getting paid like a lot of money. It seemed like a ton of money to be that age and earning that money. And we didn't know. And all of a sudden it was time to leave the country and our visa had run out. So we couldn't leave the country.
That seems like oh, your visa's run out. You can leave.
You can't stay.
But it's the other way around.
We were down there. So while I was down there, you know, the Kansas City farm team was down there with the baseball thing. So I was dating Ed Sprague, who was the pitcher, and Gilda was dating Kurt Bavacqua, who was third base at the time.
Sure.
And, you know, we were, like, having a great social life, and we were having the time.
That
we go to leave.
Amazing.
It's time to leave, and there's no internet in those days.
Right.
You know, and if you made a phone call, like I called my mom or dad, it was, like, $30, you know, to make a two-minute phone call. So it was expensive. So we tried to get out. We couldn't get out. We go to the American Embassy, and we say, what they say to us is, we're in the middle of a revolution down here. What do you want us to do? We can't help you girls.
Oh my gosh.
So we call my dad. My dad wires money to us. We were staying at the Chaminaco Hotel in Caracas, Venezuela, which was kind of a big, famous, very nice hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a nice life down there. Part of our deal was they paid for our room, you know, our rooms.
Yeah, living in a hotel. All right.
Yeah.
So daddy wired money and it never got there. So Gilda had a boyfriend because she was 24. She had a boyfriend a couple years older than her who actually flew down.
Wow.
Paid somebody. I don't know who he paid or what he did, but we got out of the country. We were down there for like a little over 6 months.
Did you ever think about hiding like in the Kansas City team plane or something?
No, but the funny thing is a gazillion years later, I was doing this Women's Health Expo in San Diego.
Yeah.
And this is maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And there's this guy standing out in the audience and he's yelling, "Hey, Jackie Zeman, it's me, Kurt Bavacqua."
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Had you seen him since Venezuela?
No.
Oh my gosh.
So small world. Funny how,
my
you know,
gosh.
goes around.
That's amazing.
Everybody meets up in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you get back to the States.
Yeah.
And you're still.
You went back to New York.
Yes.
Moved back to New York.
Then I auditioned for to be a dancer at the Schaefer Music Festival in New York and got hired.
Great.
They needed a blonde, a redhead, and a dark-haired girl.
Okay.
So I got the red-haired part, and it was for to be a K-girl for Murray the K,
okay.
a dancer.
Okay, yeah.
So Murray and I met, and we started dating shortly after that.
Yeah.
Murray had some nightclubs in New York at the time, and I was choreographing the dancers. The Hustle was in those days. Do the Hustle.
Oh, yeah.
And we were, so I would audition the dancers, hire the dancers, make up the routines for some of them, and food and, you know, all that stuff. We were having a really good time.
I didn't know you did all this dancing.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
Fun.
Wow.
And then
especially a great time to do some dancing in the 70s.
Really,
Come on.
Oh, my God. It was really fun. And being so young and, you know, crazy in New York and all of that going on.
Oh, man. What a life.
It was fun. And did that. And then.
Were you ever singing as well? Did you?
No.
No?
And you know what? Here's the silly thing. Because nobody in my family ever was in the business.
Yeah.
Nobody ever said to Phyllis or me when we were kids, sing.
Sure.
Learn to sing.
Yeah.
You know, and my family, my parents did really well, but there was not like a ton of money to just say, oh, well, I'm going to get a singing teacher and I'm going to have private lessons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the dance was so constant, I didn't even think to ask my parents, oh, by the way, I also want singing lessons.
Well, sure. You know, yeah.
So to this day, I'm a terrible singer. I love musicals. I go to musicals and I console myself with, I watch them. I'm not in them.
Yeah. Right.
That's funny.
But I imagine maybe some of your dancer friends or some of the people were auditioning for Fosse and were auditioning for all these other choreographers that required singing, probably, maybe?
Yeah, a lot of the shows did. I mean, Peter Gennaro was great. We studied with Peter, and he would choose me a lot of times to be his partner when he was doing combinations for class because I was petite. You know, Peter was great, but he wasn't that tall.
Yeah.
So we danced together, and Phyllis and I both, we wanted to be Rockettes.
Mm.
We were young. We thought, oh, how fun. We could dance
were
in Radio
tall
City.
Enough?
No, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm like 5'4". Well, I would say 5'4".
Well, I wasn't sure if the requirements, if the requirements have always been in place.
Yeah,
Peter would say, "I love you, girls, but my shortest girl is 5'6", and that's on the end of the line, and I can't go any shorter." So
yeah, that, so, I know, and that's dreams dashed.
There you go.
I know,
but it didn't matter. Then I worked in New York. I worked for a private detective.
What?
I was
doing
modeling, tailing people, following people, writing down where they went.
Come on.
It paid really well.
So are you, are
Jackie,
you,
is there, is there a is there a movie in the works here for your life? Because, I mean, like, being a dancer in Caracas eye in New York, that sounds like a good life.
I'm trying to imagine you following people like in a trench coat, but like stepping really gracefully.
Yeah, it was sort of like that.
I mean, were you... Like, are you super, like, subtle? Are you, like, can you
blend in?
Well, you know, as an actress in school, high school, so naturally, you know. And so, you know, I'm studying human nature and the psychology of people. And that was interesting to me to watch people and what they were doing and try to figure it all out.
Yeah.
So we did that. And then I got a job. I was modeling. I was a petite model. So I did a lot of runway in New York. And I was sample sizes and everything. I had small feet. You know, I was a fit model for Kaiser Roth. I just, you know. Able to make money. I did the covers of all those romance magazines with, like, the hunky guy, and I had the red curly hair and the big boobs. So all those crunch covers, you know. I could shoot, like, one or two of those a day and make money.
Amazing.
Wow. And then I got a job working for Hugh Hefner as a Playboy bunny.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
So, yeah. I worked. I was the youngest
bunny
they ever
hired. Was that based out of New York at
New
the
York.
Time? Okay,
New York
wow.
Club. Got hired by J.D., the bunny mother, and was working with all the girls. At the time, I was living on West 57th Street.
Was it when they were having the club, too?
Yeah, we had a club,
It was the club.
Bunny. It was the club. I worked in the club as a bunny, not Playmate. They offered me to shoot for the Playmate, but I said, no, I can't. My dad would, like, no, I can't do nudie stuff, you know?
Sure.
That would be, like, no in my family.
Right.
Very conservative family.
Yeah.
But I loved working that, and then I became, the promotional bunny.
Oh.
You know, that like I was traveling, I opened Great Gorge for them, the Playboy movie theater, We Magazine. We had a softball team. We'd go to Nassau and play.
Yeah.
I went to Rio de Janeiro, and he started a record company for Hef, you know, down there.
Yeah.
So I got to go to, you know, Brazil, which was really fun. And we stayed like on Copacabana Beach and, you know.
It's amazing.
And just traveled like doing a lot of stuff, a lot of talk shows.
Yeah.
So that kind of taught me what to do.
Yeah.
Sure.
That,
yeah.
You know. And the Playboy thing. And at the time, Hugh Hefner was dating Barbie Benton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to this day,
her.
Barbie's like
yes.
a good friend of mine now.
Yes.
But in those days, you know, I was like 18, and she was 21. So, you know, when you're 18 and you're looking at a 21-year-old like, oh, my God. So Barbie would come into the club and it'd be like, what's she wearing? What's her hair like? What's her purse like? And she was a singer. You know, yeah. She was on Hee Haw or one of those shows.
Sure, yeah.
She'd go in the showrooms and we'd all watch her. So little, you know, years later now, she just invited me with a friend to stay, go up to their, they have a beautiful place called the Copper Palace in Aspen. And we were up there, you know,
lovely.
About a month ago. Yeah, she's married to George Grado, who... is a, you know, very successful businessman, and Barbie's done extremely well. They have this 25,000-square-foot house. Up there. Swear to God, it's like a hotel, but it's their
home.
That's
amazing.
And it's beautiful. Yeah. So it's funny how the world...
You need a lot of stuff to put in that.
Goes you do.
Yes,
she's
you
decorated
do.
It to the gills. It's so beautiful.
It's probably twice.
Yes.
That gives me agita, yeah. Like thinking about all those
We'll
rooms
take the Holiday Inn Express in Aspen.
I just fill it with wine. That's what I would do.
So wow. Then I got out of, I worked for, I was with Playboy for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
Traveling, were you traveling, working the club
traveling,
and kind of just doing whatever?
And then I went back into NYU as a pre-med student. So I went into pre-med.
Dude, this is like a
time,
this is the fastest timeline I've ever, we could spend an hour on each Caracas. We just breezed by the private eye. Now we're in the Playboy Bunny phase, and that's gone.
I know.
And now we're back to being a doctor.
I missed that phase. I want to go back to
the private eye.
Can we go back to the bunnies?
In those days, you could carry a gun. My dad taught us all the target shoot when I was a kid.
That's amazing.
My dad was like a real adventure guy.
Yeah.
He had drove a Harley, you know, when he was a pilot.
Yeah.
I took flying lessons when I got older because I looked at my mom and my dad, and I love my mom because I was really close, but I went, oh, but my dad is the one that's having like all this fun. So.
He's got a gun and a motorcycle. It sounds like Jason.
Yeah. Not hunting, but target shooting. So he taught my sister. I have two sisters. All of us were really good shots. He taught us to shoot from the time we were, you know, old enough to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, water skiing and boating and flying. And I had a motorcycle, a little one for a while. You know, like all that stuff was interesting to me when I was younger. I've calmed down now, you know, at this chapter.
A little bit.
I'm a mom with, you know, kids. But so...
So you were pre-med?
I was pre-med in college, and I liked it because I it was challenging my brain, you know what I mean? I felt like I wanted to see, and it got to a point where I had to make a decision. Well, I was in NYU, I was still working, you know, earning a living, modeling, doing all that, and, you know, that was fun.
Yeah,
And then I had to make a decision. I was like, wait a minute, all right, so... Saturday Night Live was what was it, the dance fever? The
Yo,
Saturday Night
Travolta.
Fever.
Yeah, Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever.
Was coming out, right? So it was John Travolta. So they wanted me to audition for the girlfriend, Karen Lynn Gorney, the part that Karen Lynn Gorney did. And I was a really strong dancer. But in those days, they didn't give you a whole script. You just got the sides.
Right.
And when I read the sides, it was all cursing. Like every scene was like,
oh,
if you remember that movie.
Yeah, that's right.
F word, the S word, the H word. You know, it was like every, and I was like, no, I can't audition for this. Because my dad would like freak out if I was in a dirty movie like that. You know?
Oh yeah.
So my friend Donna Pescow took the part. She played the one of the girl that got raped. You know Donna because Donna was your mama, right?
Yeah.
Was she your mother on the sitcom?
No, she was my girlfriend's mother on the sitcom.
Oh, your girlfriend.
But she was like my mom in real life. So that worked out great for me.
That is so cool.
I remember, Steve, when you first came
on GH. So Out of This World, Donna Pescow was the mom on Out of This World.
Oh, yeah.
She was Angie. Well, she did obviously a bunch of movies. Saturday Night Fever kind of was her break. And then she did Angie, the sitcom, and then Out of This World. But she's amazing,
she's a great woman.
And,
she's fabulous.
And that's so funny that you...
We knew it. I remember when you first came on GH.
And she
said, oh, my God, you know, you're going to be working with Steve Burton. It was on the show with me. I was like, oh, my God. So I felt connected to you when you first came on GH because of the Donna connection.
Yeah. And I had the same mullet, too, so it worked out good. But she's amazing. So.
Yeah, she's great.
So you didn't audition for that.
I didn't audition for that.
But was that
Well, then at the same time, see, all this stuff was happening when you're young. You know how you get in the business, you're young. Like, everybody will let you audition for anything. You know, they want you. I was, like, young, 17, 18. They want you when you're 17, 18, when you have a little bit of experience. And you're taking lessons with everybody.
Sure,
and, you know, it's a bright and shiny time. There was that, and then the Laughing, Rowan Martin's Laughing was auditioning.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to audition for the, I think it was the part that Goldie Hawn ended up getting.
Yeah.
It was like the, you know, because they knew I'd been in South America, and I'd actually done that for real. So,
sure, yeah.
there was that. And I was like, no, you know, I knew I'm not really a comedian. So that was like all these opportunities were coming up. And it's interesting how to be so young and have choices I felt really blessed, but I wanted to choose wisely.
Well, and you're also in pre-med at the time. Did you think, were you ever juggling the notion of like, oh, I maybe finish this and become going to the medical field?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I would. I was either...
Or was that going to be a backup plan if the other stuff didn't work out? Or do you know what I mean?
No, I was just deciding. I mean, psychology was always interesting to me, so I thought I would have ended up being a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Because, again, human nature, I was always reading books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was taking a lot of acting lessons and with Wynne Hanman, American Place Theater, and Jean Buen, Sonia Moore, who was in Stanislavski's original class. You
know,
reading Uta Agen's books. I mean, all that stuff. You know, Marion Rich for Speech was... just great people in New York.
Yeah, of course.
It was exciting.
Yeah.
And then I auditioned for the this commercial. Mary Lynn Henry. Do you remember Mary Lynn and Maxine Marks were both casting directors at that time for Cunningham & Walsh, which is advertising agency in New York.
Yep.
And there was a school in New York called Video Associates where they would teach you to go on camera like they would tape, shoot your scenes, and then you could watch yourself back.
Sure, yeah.
So I enrolled in that school, and Mary Lynn Henry called me one day, and Maxine, and said, come on over. We got an audition for you for Jergens Soap.
Yeah.
Okay. So I go down to Cunningham & Walsh, and I walk into this room, and, like, there's all these gorgeous blonde model trophy girl women with long legs with incredible Barbie bodies and big blue eyes. And I'm like, I go, Marilyn, what am I doing here? I mean, I don't belong in this room with these girls. Come on. This is like, you know, totally. She goes, take the copy, go into the ladies' room, and don't come out until you have it memorized. These girls are models, but they're not actresses. You can do this. So I go in the bathroom, and thank God I have, you know, I could memorize it fast. It was 30 seconds a copy, but 30 seconds isn't that much. Compared to what we do on the soap game day.
You had no idea, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did. And in those days, they didn't put anybody on camera, you know, in the audition. It was literally all men, 25 or 27 men, all in suits, around a big conference table in the audition room.
Yeah.
So I came out. I hopped up on the table. I sat in the middle, and I did the 30 seconds of copy. And it was 30 seconds.
Why'd you hop on the table?
Because you were supposed to be in a bathtub. I was supposed to be taking a bath, in a bubble bath.
Oh, okay.
I'm bathing with Jergens soap. It's the best way to save money or copy with something like that. And I got the spot. I booked the spot. So that spot ran literally for 3 years. They kept renewing. And all it was scale. But they ran it like all day long on all the soap operas.
That's amazing.
And like the first year I made like $25,000. And the second year I made like $35,000. And then the third year I made more than that. Which, I mean, that's a lot of money now. That was a ton of money then.
Oh, my gosh.
That was like seven times what it is now.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because you know, like, this is a long time ago. I was young.
Yeah.
So, I mean, talk about luck of the draw, right?
Well, but, I mean, you were ready for the
moment. Well, you were working, too. I mean, it was an opportunity that showed up, and you were prepared for it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all that stuff that you did paid off.
The lessons. Like, over the years, a lot of people have asked me, like, what, you know, moms, and what should I tell my kids? You know, they want to go to college. They want to get in acting.
Yeah.
What should I say? And I would say an education. It's not where you get the education from, but you have to educate yourself.
Absolutely.
You can't just show up for stuff.
Yeah.
Because when you get the opportunity, you have to be able to do it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's that's great. And then so you're doing, did you just do more commercials after that? Because sometimes you get one and then
you're
doing
you were also airing during the day on, like, so was that the introduction to soap operas where people are like, what?
Yeah.
They're like, who's this girl that's in all of her commercials? Wouldn't it be great cross promotion if we put her in the dang show?
It was. Well, I got booked to do a part on my first soap gig was Edge of Night.
Yes.
It was just a couple days.
Edge of Night.
And it was a scene with Tony Craig and Dixie Carter.
Oh, my gosh.
Was Barry Newman on Edge of Night? Do you remember Barry Newman?
I didn't work with him, but I think he was. Yeah.
Is this something that was offered to you, or was this just keep auditioning?
Through my agent in New York, it came through.
It was an audition, or
I think it was an audition.
Like, you're the soap girl. Come on our show.
Yeah, no, I think it was an audition. You know, it was so long ago, I don't remember.
Sure.
But I remember doing the part, coming in, and I knew soap operas. I watched soap operas with my mom and my grandma when I was a little girl. You know, black and white TV, no clicker. You had to get up and change the channel. But we'd go. My mom was raised us kids, you know. So my elementary school in Bergenfield, New Jersey, was Franklin School. You'd walk home for lunch. They'd have the safety patrol. You'd walk home for lunch. You'd eat your lunch and go back to school.
Oh, wow.
So I watched the soaps.
Yeah.
They were 15 minutes long in those days.
Yeah.
Great.
And one was a half an hour. So you'd watch, in an hour, you'd watch three soaps.
Wow.
So I knew soap operas. I mean, I knew it like soap. So that's what. So I did that one little part on Edge of Night. And then by that time, Murray the K was a disc jockey. We're living together. We'd done the, you know, Schaefer Music. He had the clubs. We were doing all that. And we're sitting in a bagel nosh across the street from where we live. And I said, you know what? I want to be on a soap opera. That would be the perfect job. Little did I know. They were like a half an hour long. I thought you worked a half an hour a day. And you're done.
You're like,
I said, this is good.
This is good.
Sounds easy.
Quick money.
So
that's funny.
So I went and auditioned for Ryan's Hope. My agency had a great agency.
Yeah.
Kaplan Veit, which was Donna's agency also. And they sent me up, and I'm doing this. They gave me this monologue. So I'm in, again, no tape. You sit in the producer's office. And I'm doing this monologue, and it was very dramatic. And I'm like,
very dramatic.
And it was New York.
She's getting into her jersey. Her jersey's coming.
I know. I love
her jersey's coming back.
I've never heard that in your voice until you started talking about Jersey, and now I love.
I do when I do casting, I can do Jersey and Southern.
You're getting more comfortable with us.
Those are my dialects.
You're letting it come out.
A little bit of Brooklyn, like Kew Gardens, and I like Brooklyn.
Yeah, I love that. So you're auditioning for Ryan's Hope.
So I was in the office and doing this monologue, and crying my ass out because it's a very dramatic scene, and the phone rings, and the producer answers the phone.
During your audition.
In the middle of my monologue as I'm crying.
Oh, not cool.
And I'm like, okay, so I go out on the street, and no cell phones in those days. There's a phone booth, so I call Gloria, who's my agent at Kaplan Veit. It was Lily and Gloria. And I say, she goes, hi, happy to hear. And I said, yeah, it didn't go so well. I was in the middle of my monologue, and he answered the phone. She said, well, that's because he said he had seen enough. You've got the part.
Come on.
Wow.
Swear to God. So then she said, but go over to One Life to Live and
meet with
Doris Quinlan because they have a part on One Life to Live that they would like you to read for. And I'm like, well, why would I do that if they just offered me this one? She goes, One Life to Live might pay a little better. Just go over there and see what happens. So I go over, I read for One Life to Live, and they offered me that part.
Look at you
Jackie.
Go.
So I was like... Yeah, it was just
were these luck. Cold? Were these cold reads too? Were they giving you the script when you walked in the room?
Yeah, they were all cold in those days.
This
there
is
was
like
no
going
fax
to a buffet.
Machines. There was no email.
Yeah.
You know, it was just walk in, get it cold, read it, and.
Yeah.
But I was lucky. I had a good memory.
Yeah.
You know, I could always like learn stuff fast, so I could pretty much read it in the thing and know be pretty much off book quick.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So
wow.
Yeah. So I ended up taking the One Life to Live one
because it paid more.
it wasn't a whole lot more money, but actually for me at that time,
it was
a lot of money because they offered me like 2.5 shows a week, which
was
a lot on
a
soap opera.
That's a guarantee.
The guarantee was strong, you know, it was like a lot more money than,
and what,
I mean, like
when,
one day was
how many,
like what you'd work a week.
Yeah, how many did they still do year contracts or 2 years, 3 years, you remember?
Doris Quinlan, whom I adore. I go in there, and it was to work with Jameson Parker and Jackie Courtney and George Weinholt and Erica Slezak. I mean, all these amazing people were on
totally,
that show. Gerald Anthony and Kathy Breach. Judith Light came on later.
Yeah, that's Judith Light.
Right.
Yeah,
we had like an amazing – Michael Storm.
Yeah.
An amazing cast. And I signed – I think it was a 3-year contract. But Doris Quinlan, who was the producer, called me in her office and she said, okay, I shouldn't even be telling you this. We're doing an arc. It's called an arc with you. You're the part. We always ask you to sign for 3 years, but the part is probably going to last about 6 months. You can't tell anybody.
Yeah.
But there is a beginning, a middle, and an end to the story. She said, and I'm only telling you because I can see you're a sensitive person, and I don't want you to feel when I have to call you back in here in 6 months and tell you that you're not on anymore, that it will have anything to do with your work or your performance.
That was nice of her.
Yeah, that's really
so
lovely.
Kind.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
Kind, right? That I got lucky.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And then you went, man.
Because then you don't have
Ryan's
any preconceptions. If anything's extra, then you're like, cool, I stayed. And if not, you're like, okay, I knew from the beginning.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Did you ever think, though, like, if I had gone to Ryan's Hope, maybe it would have lasted longer.
No. Well, I ended up staying on one life. She calls me back in 6 months later and says, okay, so we were supposed to kill you off, but the audience likes the character so much. You're in. You're staying. You're here. You're not going anywhere.
So it was a bonus.
I was like, it was a bonus. And I ended up on that show then for 2.5 years.
Yeah. Nice.
And then...
And you were living in the city at the time.
Yes,
so it was
city.
An easy commute?
I could literally walk to work because the studio was on 66th Street on the west side.
Yeah.
And was it always in that same studio? Because I remember...
It was there.
Yes,
yeah.
It was the same one.
Yeah. Across from Des Artistes. Right there.
Yeah. And I think ABC's buildings were there too for after that, like publicity. I remember going to 66th.
Wasn't it in the same building as The View?
I don't know.
At the time, I remember.
Dude, she's not a PI anymore.
I know, right?
Yeah, I'm trying. You know what? I just remember that's where our where it was. And I remember we'd go to Cafe des Artistes for lunch, and then all those cool places were there. And I remember one time my building, we were living at Sherman Square, which was 71st Street and Broadway, a big high rise, like a 40-story building.
Yeah.
And I had a place on the 20th floor.
Yeah.
It was fabulous with this
amazing
view. You know,
like
a two-bedroom, two-bath place. And one time, there was a flood in our building, and I remember being at work. I was shooting at work, and the flood, and I had German Shepherd. My dog, Ruffian, was in the apartment. I was, like, really nervous because somebody said, oh, it's hot water. And literally my dog was on the dining room table. Because it was boiling water.
Sheesh.
And they let me go home. They would I was like, please, it's like 5 blocks. I can run really fast. I just need to go get my dog out.
Wait, was this live then?
We were live on tape.
Okay.
So... Yeah, we had to give our cameras to the 5 o'clock news. It was either 5 o'clock news or 6 o'clock news. So we would start our show, and we had to be finished in an hour. There was no pickups, no do-overs.
Wow.
And we used to joke, you changed your top half if you had a wardrobe. And in those days, sometimes a wardrobe change was 3 times in a show. You change your top half first because if you didn't have time for the bottom, they'd shoot you tight.
Yeah,
you had to change. You had a 2-minute commercial break to shoot your, you know, you were literally two people were ripping off your clothes. And we had stage managers in those days that would, like, you would be doing a scene and the show had to be out on the commercial time when it had to be out. So they would either go stretch, you know, they'd pull their hands apart to say stretch, talk slow. You got to, like, slow down the scene or tighten. Speed it up was this and tighten was like this. Because you had to end the scene. Then they'd do like 10. They'd give you a 10-second countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2. You had to be done with the last line. So that's how I learned
to do
soaps.
Back when you guys were shooting like that, did you guys do love scenes similar? Like, or... And
well, all your love scenes are short, so they didn't have to lengthen anything. So they wouldn't be saying the stretch hand. They wouldn't be saying stretching.
Yeah.
They'd be trying to be like, I'm done. I'm done with this love scene, guys. Can we cut to commercial?
But, like, when you're doing...
Calgon, take me away.
Like, I don't know. I guess when you're doing a love scene, you can fill and you can make it work. But that's interesting to me, doing a love scene live or live to tape.
Live. They'd tap your foot.
They would. Okay, that's what... Yeah.
If you had to hurry up, they'd go like this.
That's amazing.
And if they had to slow it down, they'd go slow. Yeah. And mine were all with Jameson Parker. I mean, how fun was that?
Sure.
He was married to Bonnie. Bonnie Parker, who was she had this T-shirt. She was a photographer and an airline flight attendant. And she had this, Bonnie Parker shoots people. I always loved her T-shirt. And they lived
That's
a block
great.
From us. They lived like right a block away in an apartment. So we were very close friends. We'd get together all the time.
Oh, fun.
So all my scenes were with Jameson. And I remember when I first started, like I was really nervous. Like my first day on that show, I had used to call it the tease, the prologue, the first, and then the acts, you know. The show was, I think it was 45 minutes in those days. It used to split time with another show. I don't know. Maybe it was GH. I think we shared time. One Life
oh,
to
wow.
Live. Yeah, before GH went to an hour. And and I remember going to Doris going, I don't know, Doris, you know, I don't know if this is going to be good. I just feel like I'm going to throw up before we have to shoot these scenes. It's like so much dialogue and so much stuff. And she says... Just give it a month. If you still hate it in a month, you know, I'll let you go. There are a lot of people by the butt, but you're going to be fine. And then, of course, a week later, Jameson was so great. You got used to it.
Yeah.
It didn't take long to, you know, feel like they were very welcoming to me.
Yeah.
To make me feel, because I was the most inexperienced one on the set. They all knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they were really good people. And I was like, oh, can I keep up with these people? But they were kind to me. And nobody ever made me feel like, oh, she's the newbie. You know, she doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah.
So, it worked out really well.
That's amazing.
And that was 2.5 years.
That was 2.5 years there. And then
did that end just story? Did story just dictate it, or were you done?
Yeah, story. They killed off the character. Okay. Character became an alcoholic and ended up like it was like this drug. I had to gain weight. I had to gain weight because I was drinking a lot. Well, I didn't have to, but I did because I wanted to look puffy.
Sure.
In the face because I was still young. You know what I mean? So I wanted to get that look, and I didn't drink, and I didn't take any drugs or do anything, so I didn't have that look.
Right.
so I had to gain weight to do it, and then they had me dying. You know, they had Lana McLean was my name on that show. Lana was, like, dying. I had this black silky slip on and, like, this hair. I had actually brown hair at the time.
Okay.
Long brown hair. And I'm at this Beatlemania at the theater one day, which was on Broadway. That Murray was special consultant for Beatlemania. Yeah. And we lived, like, in our neighborhood. Like, John and Yoko were in our neighborhood, and he was friends with all the Beatles, so I got to meet them and hang
that's
out with them.
Wow, really, that's so cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So Murray was asked to be special consultant for Beatlemania, and I'm in the theater, and it was at the Schubert, not the Schubert, which theater in New York? I came to the Schubert here. Well, whatever theater it was in New York. And who's sitting next to me, this man one night, and watching the show, and he looks at me, and he goes, oh, I'm Fred Silverman. You know, I've seen it on the shows. You have it. Would you like to do a sitcom? Because he was director of programming at ABC.
Oh my gosh!
And I had been on One Life to Live.
Yeah.
So he kind of knew what was going on. How would you feel about it? But in those days, so about me, duh, I say, yeah, you know, I kind of like the drama. I'm on the soap opera. He goes, yes, I'm aware. He goes, I'm head programmer. I'm like, oh. So he said, you know, but in those days, to be on a sitcom, you had to kind of play like dumb bubblehead. And I didn't want to play dumb bubblehead. I felt I'm a really intelligent woman.
Yeah.
You know, I never got parts because of my looks. I got parts, I thought, because of my creativity or my brain, you know, and I didn't want to like do what I. So me, of course, duh. See, this is where if someone in my family had known about the business, it said, Jackie, go in. See what meet with them.
See what happens.
See what they say. Yeah, you know? But anyway, it worked out good because a couple of days later, I got a phone call from Jackie Smith, who was head of daytime. And she said, would you be interested in going out to California to do a part on General Hospital?
This week's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by Theragun. Theragun is a handheld, battery-operated, professional-grade percussive therapy device that helps to alleviate pain, improve mobility, and enhance performance. How's it going with your Theragun, bro?
It's good, man. Listen, I'm excited because I have a lot of, like, tension and from working out. And what I've been doing now is I've been using it just kind of all over my body before I go work out.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, sure.
Right, just to kind of get the blood flow going. And then, and then, you know, later today, I'll kind of use it on the problem areas. Usually it's in my traps, you know, in my rhomboid area, in my back, it's tight.
Sure.
And it's been actually great for my tendonitis.
Oh, I bet in your forearms and whatnot.
Oh, dude, it's great because I can just, you know, a lot of times you're trying to tell the person where to put the freaking thing,
right?
You know, you're over to the left, to the left. Totally. So it's good for me because I can pinpoint where I need it because I'll get tight in, after working out in my pecs, my shoulders and my tendonitis. So it's been great for me, dude. It's a game. Honestly, it's a game changer. I told Sheree this morning, I go, the fact that I can do this, this is amazing to myself.
Well, so we've had it for about a couple of weeks now, and there's been a slight learning curve, which has been fun though, because you're finding new uses for it. So the first day we got it, I was like, you know, Kira has bad neck and shoulder pain, and I was like, oh baby, this is going to change your life. And so, but this thing, so imagine, so it's percussive therapy, so it taps you very, very fast, so fast that it. And so it creates this
vibration, essentially.
Vibration in your muscles, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't know the strength of this thing. I didn't know. I was basically holding a jackhammer in my
hand. You had it on jackhammer speed, didn't you,
dude? And so I'm like, I'm like, ready, Kira, and I just lean right into her, and it's like she's like shaking. And poor girl. So there was a bit of a learning curve in our family because I'm a bit of a dummy. But what has been wonderful for her is she gets restless leg syndrome. And so before bed, it's become kind of our new routine on the couch when we're watching TV. I'll just give her a little Theragun, or she will.
Sure.
On her calves.
Yeah, dude.
Her IT band, like just, especially her calves though. And it's really helped her out. And it's, yeah. so that's anyway, so this is becoming a very long read.
It is, but it's true because it really does wonders. I'm telling you right now, you know, it's easy to use the device.
Oh my gosh. It's easy to use for yourself, as Steve said.
Yeah.
Or for someone else, you know, so it's a great thing. You can really treat yourself. And, for listeners of That's Awesome, if you go to theragun.com/awesome, you get two free attachments with purchase. And
yeah.
For Steve, like your tendonitis, the right attachment is a big deal.
For sure. Yeah. And they have a small kind of pinpoint one that I could get in there. So
absolutely.
It's really great for me.
Yeah. So take a look at the website, see what it's all about. It really is a wonderful, wonderful device created by a chiropractor for all body types.
Yeah.
So go to theragun.com/awesome.
Awesome.
To get two free attachments with your purchase.
Go check it out.
Would you be interested in going to California to work on a general hospital? We've been trying to cast apart. We've read a lot of girls, young women, and we haven't found anybody. Well, Murray's show, Beatlemania, was moving to the Schubert Theater in Century City time.
Wow.
So we had to come out to California.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I had only been in California once, and this was like a year or two prior. And at that time, Murray was producing a lot of shows, a lot of rock and roll shows. We had come to California, and I was working as a PA on his show. He was doing a show, and Dionne Warwick was the star of his show.
Sure. Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm, you know, my job is like keep Dionne Warwick happy. Okay. Which was really easy because she's a love. She was
very nice.
Yeah, like an amazing woman. So I find out, there's no internet in those days. So, you know, it wasn't that easy to find out stuff, but I knew she liked yellow roses. So make sure there's a bunch of yellow roses in her dressing room. And then I go to her, Miss Warwick, what would you like for lunch? And she says, a tuna sandwich? Kind of with a question mark. Great. Now, I'm in, like, L.A. all of, like, 3 hours. You know what I mean? I had no clue where to get a tuna sandwich.
Right.
There's no who you ask.
Right. You can't go on Yelp.
Yeah. There's no way. But I was so stressed because, like, that's such a simple – she's trying to be easy, a tuna sandwich.
Well, that's like a deli thing.
Trying to find a deli, though. I was a New York girl. There's a deli on every block.
Yeah, right.
Go out the door of the studio. I'm walking up and down. Is there a deli around here? And people are looking at me like, no.
And this is down in Century City?
Yeah.
And this was probably before the Westin was built.
It was different anyway. So anyway, it was fine. We did it. And years later, she ended up living up in Beverly Hills off of Coldwater. And she was living on Sunset Boulevard in one of those big mansions, you know, that's like right there with her mom and her family. And we became friends. But I always went back to that time, the first time I met her, how lovely. So she was really terrific.
Yeah. Did she actually like tuna sandwiches, though?
She actually liked tuna sandwiches. She ate it. She was happy.
Great.
So anyway, I know that was kind of random, but
that's great.
So here I am and ready to, you know, Jackie Smith is calling saying, and I said, well, are you offering me the part? She said, well, I want to know if you'd be interested in the part because if it works out, it will be yours. You won't have to audition. But Douglas Marland is the writer, and we're going through, I guess, GH, they were considering maybe taking it off the air at the time.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know. The ratings were really low at the time. So there's this big changeover. Gloria Monty was coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Doug Marlin was the head writer. She said, so Doug, the head writer will have to meet with you. And assuming that he approves you, then we will offer you the part.
Great.
Like, oh, okay. I mean, she said, we don't need your audition. You've been on One Life to Live for, you know, 2.5 years. We know you can act.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay. But this was a big boost to my confidence because I was still very young.
Sure.
You know? And so I was like at the time 23, just about to turn 24.
Yeah.
And to be offered a role, like a big contract, and to go to California right at the same time my boyfriend has got to be in California.
I mean, it sounds amazing.
Talk about the angels lining up and your guides to say, hey, it's a wonderful life.
Right.
So Douglas Marlin drove into the city. And for the people that are listening that don't know, Douglas Marlin is one of the all-time great, great legend writers of daytime. He was like...
did he do before?
Before GH, I couldn't tell you, but I just know on GH, he was like amazing. And yeah. he had come with like an amazing background. I think he had
sure.
written a lot of
stuff.
I'm
sure he did. Yeah, yeah.
And he's just was loved and he knew what he was doing. And to get a Douglas Marlin at that time was a big deal.
And you met him in this, when you say you drove into the city, he drove into New York?
Into New York yeah. City because he lived up in Connecticut. Which is another story I'll tell you after I finish this. So he drives in to come to my apartment to meet me in my apartment. Well, wow. Murray's in my apartment,
yeah.
which is, you know, a nice apartment. But in those days, it was all lavender. It was I always liked decorating. So it was all like lavender carpeting and lavender walls, like
ooh.
That pinky lavender. It was really pretty. And then these gold, this is going to sound so
Murray,
tacky, but it was really
Murray
beautiful.
Was a good sport, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he let me do it. He let me do it. But he liked all that. He liked all that zhuzh, you know.
Yeah.
The zhuzh, I love
he
that.
He liked the zhuzh.
Sure.
And he liked that I was always a girly girl.
Yeah.
I liked the decorating, and
yeah.
I was like, you know, put my makeup on and, you know, dressed
sure.
up as a dancer. And young, yeah. you know, what the hell.
And he was
fun.
In show business, too. So
he was,
it
and
worked.
He was very... effervescent personality and
yeah.
As a dancer and a disc jockey and gift of the gab, and you know, he was amazing. He was amazing. I loved him so much. So anyway, Douglas Marlin comes in, and our furniture was like real low sofas and lots of cushions. And there's Douglas Marlin sitting on the floor on my cushions on my lavender apartment, and literally he stayed talking to me for about 4 hours. So I knew it was going well.
Like talking story or just getting to know you or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, just most – well, the first couple hours was just conversation. We're
yeah.
talking and laughing and joking and then all of a sudden it's like some story and he told me a little about what he wanted to do with the character and I loved, you know, what he was saying.
Yeah.
And then he left and my phone rang and I don't remember it was later that afternoon or the next morning and it was Jackie Smith saying, well – you want the part? You're going to California. And I'm like, yeah, heck yeah, I want the part.
Yeah.
So,
so
Ken Schreiner had been on the show just right before me. And I guess he had read with a lot of the girls that they were auditioning
yeah.
for the part because it was
right.
coming to be the Laura Scotty Bobby triangle.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
It's
a big
yeah.
deal.
So,
yeah.
So, did they make you a Spencer? After, or was that the plan?
I was us Bobby Spencer right then and there.
Right then and
in.
There.
Right then and there.
So
and
was,
Tony wasn't on the show.
Tony wasn't on the
after.
Show yet. Right.
He
that's why I was
after.
Asking. Right. Okay.
So, yeah. You know, like,
so they made him your brother.
They made him my brother. He
yeah.
had actually auditioned to be, Tony had actually auditioned to be Mitch Williams, who worked with Jane Elliott, Tracy Quartermain,
yeah.
who was a congressman, you know, but he needed to be, that guy needed to be real white bread, waspy, blonde hair, blue eyes. They
yeah,
wanted
yeah.
that look. And Tony, you know,
yeah.
wasn't
yeah.
that look. So he
yeah.
didn't get that part, but they liked his audition so much, they wrote Luke for him.
Wow.
Created
oh, wow.
Luke for him.
That was That's... smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That was smart.
Yeah. Yeah. And Asher Brauner was on as Roy at the time. It was before A came on as Roy, you know, so it was all this.
So you got thrown in kind of with Ken.
Ken right away, and Emily McLaughlin was on, Jesse
yes.
Brewer,
yes.
Gerald Anthony, you know, who was like hysterical. I loved it. He would just tell me where to get the best Italian food and lasagna, and he used to read everything off the prompter and make it look like he wasn't doing that. Those days when we had prompters.
Yeah.
And the only one that ever used him was Gerald, but they kept him because he was such a big soap star.
Yeah.
You know, nobody
yeah.
would like tell him, no, we're not going to have a prompter anymore.
You didn't use, did you use prompters in New York?
I've never used them. Even
when
we
but
had,
were they available?
I'm trying to remember. I'm probably pretty 99% sure we had them. But, you know, my memory of that is not because I never used them even
sure.
here. I never used them. So
right.
yeah.
I don't have, like, a connection to whether we had
right.
them or not.
Yeah.
I do remember they got rid of them here pretty soon. The money, it was budget.
Oh, yeah. It's
it
a
was
lot
just, yeah,
yeah.
going over the budget.
Yeah.
But I remember coming, and so here, my deal to come out to California was, now this is when ABC owned ABC. It was before
this is
Capital
Cities.
Cities, before Disney, before
oh,
all that.
Okay.
They gave me a bungalow in the Beverly Hills Hotel
For
3 to 6 months.
Okay.
I had my dog, Ruffian, so it had to be a bungalow because the dog wasn't allowed in the regular hotel. So
sure.
they gave me the bungalow. With the dog. They gave me 3 sets of first class tickets so
in
I could.
In the Beverly Hills Hotel.
In the Beverly Hills Hotel.
That's
back
nice.
And forth so I could go.
Where were you shooting at the point?
The shooting was the old Desi Lu studio. We used to call it Camp Cahuenga on Cahuenga.
Okay, yeah.
Where they shot all the Desi Lu shows. And those studios they were outside. So the makeup room was a separate building from, like, Gloria's office, the office, we would call the fifth floor later, and then the stage. So it was raining. Not that it rains much in California, but you had to go outside to get to the stage.
Sure, gosh.
So it was like, it was really old school.
Like going from the hair building to set with an umbrella.
Wow. But it was exciting because I had watched all the other I Love Lucy shows.
Being on that set is so cool.
Being in that set. Wow. Karma.
Yeah, for sure.
The history is
so
awesome.
So you're in the bungalow with your dog.
With my dog. So New York.
My
dog.
Yeah. Three sets of first class tickets.
Back and forth so I could come for the wardrobe fitting, a couple days before we had a shoot, and then come out. And Murray brings the dog, Ruffian, on the plane. He puts a patch on one eye and says, because everybody knew he was Murray the K, he was pretty on like a lot of TV.
He put a patch on the dog's eye or his
on
own?
On his eye.
Okay, I was checking too.
This is a
special needs dog.
He said, I need to bring the dog on the plane. I need him as a seeing eye dog because my other eye doesn't see well. Because he wasn't going to put Ruffian downstairs because in those days, the oxygen, there were problems.
For sure. Yeah.
And she was extremely well, we had a lot of German Shepherds. We were always trained. They didn't even need to be on a leash. You could walk, but people don't know that. They see a big black dog, they get scared. Really. So we'd always have her on a leash, but she was like a mate. You'd stop walking, she'd sit. So we weren't worried on the plane. We knew she'd be fine, but she comes on the plane. Murray's got the patch, and they're all like, wait, you're Murray the K, you're not blind. And then he'd say, yeah, but my other eye's not good. And I poke myself in the eye, and I'm like, oh, okay. So she's good. She'd get on the plane, and we're just ready to take off, and they rev up the engines.
Uh-oh.
Oh. She starts howling. She panics. She'd never been on a plane before.
Oh my gosh. And this is
that's amazing. What happened?
It was fine. She calmed down after a few minutes, but I love that Murray had the chutzpah to put her on the plane.
That's amazing because back then there probably wasn't support animals where you can bring your support goat on.
Nothing like that.
What a great name, Ruffian. Love that.
Named after a racehorse because Murray liked horses. Yeah. Used to go to the track a lot and watch the horses.
Well, but just like the word Ruffian has rough in it.
Ruffian. She was a great dog. Yeah. I loved her. And then when we got out here was Runner. Was in our other German Shepherd that we got here. Beverly Hills Hotel and all that stuff, and a full time limo and a driver. Bobby Grillo was my driver the whole time because I came from New York.
Wow, so you had no car. So
actually, we did have a car in New York, but we didn't bring it out.
Did you have your driver's license?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you did.
I was a Jersey girl.
Well, I wasn't sure.
Had a Corvette. I always had Corvettes. I was like a Corvette girl. So I did, and we got a place literally. So Bobby was our driver. They gave me the limo and to get back and forth to work.
Yeah,
and we're looking for a place to live. So, Bobby, where should we live? And he goes, well, for you, either I'd say Beverly Hills or Marina Del Rey. I'm like, well, had no clue what Marina Del Rey was. Right. And I said, well, which is closer to the studio? He goes, oh, Beverly Hills is a lot closer. I'm like, okay, let's go there. So he drives us up the hill. And literally, I was in town. I had one day. I had to find a place to live. I had to go to work, the next day. He's got a Bic lighter. And we go into this house off of Coldwater on Beverly Hills Hotels on Eden Drive. And we go in. It looked nice. It was pretty. It was like the perfect size, exactly what we wanted. It was close because all you had to do was drive down Coldwater Canyon, make a left on Sunset.
And you're there.
And you're at the studio.
Yeah. Right.
Which was great. So he's got the Bic lighter. The electricity, I guess, was off because it was between tenants. The ones that had been renting turned it off and wasn't on yet. So we got the lighter, and I'm looking at him going, "What is the furniture nice? Like, do I like it? Is the rug clean?
Because this is rental, or are you going to buy it?
No, rental.
Yeah.
Because we weren't going to, we had one day. It was like, just rent.
Yeah.
But it was it ended up being great. We took it.
Yeah.
Needless to say. So that was good. And it was...
Wow.
Exciting. It started on General Hospital, and then, General Hospital just hit.
So what year was that you started?
What did I start? 70. I actually worked like one or two days. I think it was 78, and then 79, my show's aired.
Right.
Okay.
So it was 79, because I've been on now. I've been on this my 43rd year.
Wow.
General Hospital, yeah.
Can you imagine?
Which is really good.
So Ken has you by like... a year or something as the longest running character or something like that?
Yeah, like 6 months. So. Well, no, Leslie was on actually.
Oh,
right at the same time. It was Ken, Leslie, Stuart.
Oh, that's right.
Damon.
When we talked to
but
her, she was like,
only been
yeah,
a few
yeah,
months. Like, yeah, like maybe she was on like 3 months
well,
or something.
Well, thank God yeah, Ken's not the...
I know, doesn't have that thing to... Because yeah, he'd get a t-shirt made or something.
I know. Well,
or
yeah,
he'd be telling me every day.
Get it embroidered into his, like, or yeah, embossed on his Vespa.
We did a little tour, like, I don't know when it was, the last year, the year before, when we had our 42nd year Jersey of the Comedy Clubs. And like, what you guys
yeah,
do,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know what I mean? The Comedy Clubs. And a lot of people came out, and it was really, really
that's
nice,
so fun, yeah.
That's so cool.
So then my phone rings one day. I'm out there, and I get a phone call from Doris Quinlan, who's
One Life to Live lady.
One Life to Live producer. And she says, oh, coming out to California. Her partner was Hazel, who used to do the wardrobe. Hazel and I are coming out to California, and so I invite her over. You know, I said, oh, come on over. I'll, you know, we'll make lunch. I had a day off, make lunch, and we're having lunch. And, you know, I'm telling her, oh, you know, what do you watch on TV? I'm like, oh, well, you know, I like that show, Bewitched. So a week later, she calls me. She says, I'm having a dinner party. I want you to come to my party. I said, okay, thanks. So Marie and I go over there. Who's sitting at her dinner party?
Elizabeth Berkley?
Elizabeth
Montgomery.
Montgomery.
Yeah,
Elizabeth
Montgomery. Berkley. She's the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh,
here we go.
Elizabeth Montgomery.
Here we go.
Elizabeth Montgomery sitting there, and it's like four people are at this dinner party. It's not like 12, 20 people.
Was her hair really high?
Four people. She was gorgeous. Yeah. But she's sitting at the table, and she looks, and she goes, I watch your show every day. I love your work. I'm sitting there. I'm going, Elizabeth Montgomery is telling me she thinks I'm a good actress. Oh, my God. I was like, And I said,
so
I've
awesome,
watched every show you've ever done. I'm Bewitched. I said, I learned acting from watching you. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
I've watched everyone through all the different Darrens, for all
right,
the different shows.
Yeah, there's a lot of Darrens.
There's
right,
a lot of Darrens. Tabitha, the kid, the mom, Agnes Moorhead, you know, all of them. I was like, oh, my God.
Well, and what a great – I love that show. And thinking about what
– I liked it.
Thinking about what you said earlier about like not wanting to do sitcoms because, you know, but on that show, she was the brain and the guys were the bubbleheads,
yeah,
right? Darren was the bumbling fool and she was the one that was so just like...
Together. The power.
Yeah.
She had the power.
Yeah, she had the power, yeah.
Yeah.
Loved that show.
And but yeah, she also had the feminine softness... likability part to her character
yeah,
that she
yeah,
was never trying to like outshine her husband or make him look weak. It was always what Darren, you know, fighting with him like Darren wouldn't approve. Got to keep Darren happy. I mean, he's my husband. You know what I
yeah,
mean? So there was a dichotomy. Her character was interesting because
yeah,
she brought a lot to it.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, when they asked me about sitcoms, I didn't have the amount of confidence to think I could ever be like, you know, Elizabeth Montgomery. Like
right,
I assumed because I was young. And bouncy, a bit of a people pleaser,
yeah,
that I was going to get the bubblehead part. You
yeah,
know?
Sure, sure. Yeah,
it just goes to show perspective. There was a big lesson in that
yeah,
in life that you know, one, you create your reality, two, but your perspective really does determine the reality of your future.
Yeah.
So if you can envision it and whatever you believe or what you see for yourself, that's who you become.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's
yeah,
the walk
for sure.
You walk.
We do talk yeah, about that.
Well,
that
yeah,
is true.
What an exciting time. So that's.
So when you were here, and then when did GH kind of like, you know, what when
within
did
the
it,
next
when
couple
did it
years,
pop where you guys were on
quick boom
TV Guide magazines
right away
and doing all that stuff
happened so fast it was
so
like
really
the, Gloria Monty turned the we had a meeting one day we're at Desilu Studio and she calls me it was one of my first couple of days on the set and she's like my character and I go Gloria Barbara Spencer I said you know Barbara. The care, it sounds like it's a beautiful name, but it sounds kind of a sophisticated name. And I see Bobby as kind of, you know, if you wanted to be have such an agenda, Doug Marlon told me, an agenda.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to get her way. She's going to be at times a little sneaky, a little wrong side of the tracks, a little like desperate to get what she wants, but really smart. I said, good. I have to play the characters really smart. I don't want to play a dumb character.
Right.
And I said, Barbara, though, I need her to be, if she's going to be all these things, she's got to be positive. She's got to be fun. She's got to be able to laugh. She's got to be a bit entertaining because she's got to be likable. I mean, you can't just make her like this slithering snake who's,
sure,
you know, not interesting. So I said, Barbara, can we, like, change the name? And she's like, she looks at me, she goes, how about Barbie? And I said, no, not Barbie. Barbie with the boobs and the blonde hair. I'm not competing with that.
Right.
She goes, Bobby. And I was like, yes, Bobby. Was the perfect name.
Right.
So that's how my character got my name.
Wow.
Bobby. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It came out in this, like, you know, 2-minute meeting with Gloria in her office of discussing, you know.
And she already been established as Barbara, but you could easily make it a nickname?
Yeah, well, it was right early on.
Yeah.
And then when, you know, when Tony came on, he used to call me Barbara Jean, my full name, Barbara Jean. But he was the only one that ever called me Barbara Jean.
Right.
Because it was Bobby Spencer.
And right.
Bobby Spencer, you know, it was like fun. And,
yeah.
And I dyed my hair red when I came out to California. I had been Lana. I had gained weight. I literally did not eat for 4 days, lost all the weight. I was young then. So I dropped it. I wanted Bobby to be thin.
It's called fasting.
And bouncy, fasting. Yeah, I mean, at the time. And I never had an eating disorder, so this was hard for me not to eat. But I dropped like 10, 12 pounds in 4 days. It was like, boom. And I dyed my hair red because I wanted Bobby to be – I thought red would be fun, red curly hair, different.
And you had had some redness in your hair before because you talked about being the dancer and you were the redhead. Like, so,
I had reddish brown hair, so it wasn't a big difference. But as Bobby, I wanted it redder. When I was younger, my hair was really red on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I was told at one time they had a rule that nobody else could be hired on the show that had red hair.
All right.
Like my family
that
member.
Spot is filled.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now, you know, it's all changed. Laura Wright's blonde and Jocelyn, like all my family. That's changed over the years.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
But for a long time.
So do you remember being a part of that shift where – did life change when all of a sudden, okay, we're just actors on this show? And in New York, I'm sure you're a public figure, but all of a sudden you're in LA and you're on this show that is now a kind of a national or international phenomenon. Like, do you remember this? Do you remember having a sense of that or no?
I knew the show. You know, it's whatever becomes normal to you is your normal.
Of course.
And I remembered as I was leaving New York, Wynn Hanman, you know, at American Place Theater, I'd taken a lot of lessons with him. And he was like a really great teacher and a really, you know, like an icon in the business. And he said, don't go do that soap opera. He said, you have the potential to be a great actress, but you're going to do that soap opera and you're going to get into some really bad habits and you're just going to stay forever and you're never going to want to leave because you'll get used to the money. Don't do that. He goes, you could. And I'm like, Wynn? They want to pay me to earn a living, to be on a TV show. What, so I should turn it down and stay in New York and
slave
work
away
as a
for
PI
the art?
Or be, you know, stay in the bunny club or do my modeling things? I said, that goes away pretty soon. You know what I mean? Because at the time I was 23 turning 24. Yeah. I said, no. So I never had any regrets. I was so glad that I came out. But it's interesting. Yeah. Again, it's perspective.
Sure.
Like, how do you see your life, you know? And I loved the fact that Murray was coming out, and I was in love with Murray. We were together. We weren't married yet. We got married the following year at Tavern on the Green.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, everybody came. Everybody, I had like 12 bridesmaids. And like all the, you know, my friends here came and were my bridesmaids in New York. And, you know, it was fun. And
did you guys keep your place in New York?
No, we got rid of it.
You got rid of it.
We got rid of it. And, oh, I killed myself because.
Yeah, you
think? Like, look at what now the places are. And then I bought a few years later. I was writing this book in 1984 with my friend Diana Whitley, who you might remember. She's a photographer and a writer. Anyway, I was doing this book. And Simon & Schuster was publishing it. And she calls me. She had a place in L.A. and New York. She calls me and goes, my building is going co-op in New York. And the penthouse upstairs is available. And the guy who owns it is rents it, has the opportunity to buy it. He just wants to flip it. He wants to make $25,000 on it. Do you want to buy it? So I go, is it nice? So, you know, again, no cell phones, no, you can't look.
Sure,
is it nice? She goes, I don't know. I'll go. I said, go up and look. So she's, you know, I'll call you right back. She runs upstairs. She comes in. She goes, it's really nice. It has a 180-degree view. And she goes, it's just a one bedroom, but it has ice cream cake moldings on the ceilings and high ceilings and a, you know, fireplace and beautiful hand-painted tiles in the bathroom. And she said, the kitchen's real small, but who needs a kitchen in New York?
Right.
And it was on Gramercy Park, key to the park, elevator man, doorman, concierge.
Oh, my 180, gosh.
The whole half of the penthouse, top of the building. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. Because I was working. I had money saved.
You know,
when you're that age, what do you spend money on anything? All I ever did was work. I never went shopping. So I had the money, and I bought it and never used it. I mean, in those days.
You just kept it rented or you just was vacant?
I didn't even rent it. It was vacant and for like a long time. And at that time, my dad had gotten really sick. My dad had leukemia. And I was flying back to pretty much every Friday on the red eye, thinking it might be the last time I ever see my dad to go to New Jersey. And in those days, you know, a first class ticket wasn't that expensive. So, of course, I was flying on the red eye first class. And they had the helicopter you would take from Kennedy that would take you to the top of the Pan Am building in New York. So I'd always do the ticket, you know, the first class. If you're first class, you got the helicopter for free.
What?
And you'd go. Yeah, they'd
take
you from the plane. Literally, you'd grab your luggage and the helicopter would take you and land on the building.
Because otherwise, getting to LaGuardia to Manhattan's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, just getting, you know, in those days, there's no Uber town. You took a town car. It was a little town car or a stretch or
now
whatever.
There's Uber helicopter.
Yeah,
you know
it
that?
Was like Uber helicopter. I mean, boy, I hate it. When they stopped that, that was a bummer because that was really nice to have that. It was so convenient.
For sure.
But I was coming home, you know, on the weekends, you know, to see my dad and traveling back and forth. So it was like a crazy like year and a half. You know, there was a lot going on.
Right. And that was the first year and a half of being here in L.A., huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
First year and a half. Being, so I learned a lot of stuff really fast.
I guess.
And made a lot of friends. And Emily, in those days, a lot of actors on GH had homes up on Crestline, up by the, which is up there. You know, Emily had one. Rachel Ames had one. I think John
Might
have had, they all had them, you know?
Yeah.
So I was thinking of getting one up there. But Emily used to invite, like every weekend I was up there, we would all go up there and we'd party. Like we were truly, like Emily's son was always at the Troubadour. So we were going to the Troubadour like once a week.
Yeah.
They had a, you know, a skate rink on La Cienega. And we're all going skating, you know, in the skate rink. We had this life where we were all young. And, you know, when you're 23, 24, you can sleep 3 hours a night and you go out. And we were working long hours.
Yes. Sure.
Second dinner break. We had two dinner breaks every night. Second dinner break was like 10:30, 11 o'clock. It was usually soup. First dinner break was like 7.
I do second dinner these days.
There you go.
Second dinner is great.
Second
Yeah, but that's alcohol.
It's always pizza and wine.
That's a nightcap.
Yeah, you get your healthy dinner at 6:30 and then pizza and wine at 10. It's amazing.
But that's so funny. Yeah.
But that's how late you guys were working.
We worked long days. And we'd start. And I always had scenes with Jeannie, who was underage at that time. So we always had to do her stuff first and get her out.
Right.
So in those days, we started taping at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's when we started taping the show.
Jeez. That's when you started.
We started.
Yeah, because they'd rehearse
and block
them. Yeah, we'd have a rehearsal, like our dress rehearsal. I think it was like 2-ish. Done at 3, get notes.
So that went, and then it was live to tape.
Yeah, it was pretty much, I mean, they took time, but it wasn't, and if Gloria wanted something done over, we would do it over, but it was like 4 o'clock was a late start. We took a long time on the scenes in those days.
Even when I came, they took a long time.
You were shooting in order at that point?
Yeah, we shot in order, unless it was a Jeannie thing and we had to get her out. At some point in there, they started doing by sets because they had to get her out at a certain time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we used to do the show in order, which would be, like, a lot easier as an actor.
Oh,
you know?
Good gosh. Yeah. For sure it would be.
And then, you know, then we went to later on, we went to block. With Gloria, I think we, I'm not even remembering. My God, did we do block tape? I know with Wendy we did a lot of block tape. Gloria wasn't a real big block tape person.
I can't remember. I was here the last year Gloria was here. That's when I got hired.
Oh, okay.
The very last year.
Last year,
So I remember that we would start sometimes after I can't.
They would move it around. And
it changed
change it
a little bit
because it went Capital Cities and it went Disney and then it went Network and they was doing all these focus groups and then we got Wes Kenny and then we had Joe Hardy and then Gloria came back.
Maybe that's the last time
we had two Gloria Montes.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. I was here the second shift.
The second shift. Okay,
yeah. 91 was when I came. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
1991. Yeah.
So my girls, my daughters were born in 90 and 91. So you came right in between Cassidy and Lacey.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Right then.
Wow.
And now look at them. It's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Cassidy's amazing. Married and is pregnant.
Wow.
Baby girl due December 30.
How fun.
That is amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. My first human grandchild.
You've been a lot of fur
dogs and fur babies all. And on TV, I've been a grandma for 25 years.
Right.
So, but now in real life, I'm finally having a real grandchild.
That's amazing. Congratulations. That's so much fun.
Wendy and where are they? Where do they live?
They live in San Francisco.
Oh, that's right. You told me. Yes, San Fran.
And they're very – and then my other – the younger one, Cassie's my first, my eldest, whom anybody who watches General Hospital for a long time
– should be
– the baby blankets, I still have every one that you ever knitted and sent to me.
Were they ever in the hospital set when
– the Christmas show?
Christmas show?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In their pajamas. They'd come and be on the show. And
did you know they did that, Brad?
Oh, because somebody read Night Before Christmas, right?
And people would bring their kids.
John would read Night Before Christmas. Yeah. And everybody that worked on the show, if you had young kids and you wanted them on, you could bring them.
That is
actors,
so cool.
You know, fifth floor, the office people, the crew, everybody. The kids would come on.
Yeah.
And they'd most of them would have their pajamas on because they'd be like patients in the hospital. And some would be all dressed up like they were siblings of the ones that were in the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, be always like, who's wearing where and what. You know, it would be really fun.
A lot of fun.
That is so sweet.
It was great.
Right.
Yeah. So before we let you go, because I know you're working today and we appreciate your time, was there anything, any story that, like, when I got here, it was the story that stood out for me was when you and Brad did BJ's heart transplant.
Oh yeah,
was it a heart transplant?
She was passing, and we gave her heart to Maxie.
That was one of the greatest stories ever, I thought. So, but for you, what, you know, because obviously you've been here long enough, but I'm going to say that in a nice way.
Yeah.
Because there's times in your life where you're like, oh, that was a great story. Like when you first got here, there might have been a story like, oh, that was fun. I remember that one really well. Because we've all done a ton of stories.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you don't remember them all.
You don't until somebody says something.
Until someone says it. And then you're like, oh, I think I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
Right? So are there ones that you look back on and you're like, oh, that was a cool one, this one and that one, or maybe it was just one. I don't know. But we just like to because I know that you've done a lot of stories and I forget a lot of stuff, and people are like, oh, remember that? I was like, yeah, actually, that was a cool story. So are there ones that kind of stand out?
Let's see. Bobby Spencer, Brock Meyer, Jones, Cassadine, Almost Jack Spencer. So there have been a lot of husbands. And out of that list, a lot of that I was with, that love interest that I didn't marry on the show.
Yeah.
Like Ken Schreiner, like Rick Springfield.
Roy.
DeLuca.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On and on and on. You know, yeah. there were like bona fide love interests, but we didn't get married. So, yeah.
Right.
I have to say, I feel really blessed that I have worked with amazing men on this show who are all dear to my heart, and most of them have remained friends.
Right. Sure. Was Roy DeLuca, was that A. Martinez?
Yeah. Well, the first one was Asher Bronner.
Okay, gotcha.
And I loved Asher. So Asher came on. Our show was so popular in those days. Other networks were literally offering us contracts and money just not to resign on GH. I had other networks calling me saying, we'll pay you upwards of $250,000 a year just not to resign. You don't even have to come here and work. Just don't resign your GH contract. You can go audition for whatever you want, not daytime. I mean, our show was really popular.
Wow.
Our show,
dude, when
everybody
they're when they're trying
the
to
show.
Take the show but down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Crazy.
That's amazing.
Wow. So when you say what it was in those days, everybody, bookings, PAs.
Oh, they gosh. Used
to, you know, we got really lucky.
Yeah.
Not only for the confidence as young actors, but also they paid us a lot of money.
Well, sure.
Yeah,
and there was a lot of opportunity there to grow and to, you know, expand.
Yeah.
So a lot of the people that I worked with all those years, I got really close to them and was happy with them. And, you know, when you say storylines, oh, God, I've had so many.
I know you have.
I was really happy when they brought Tony in.
Yeah, I just thought that was a really special story.
Because I like the relationship.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I like the relationship. I have to say, every single love interest that I had, I liked the way the story went.
Mm-hmm.
There was the one that was hard for me was Bobby and Damien, when Damien and Lucy made a bet and he was trying to like bed Bobby, and they made a bet that he could or, you know, he couldn't. And I had a really hard time with that. And I remember going up and saying, it's a good story, but it's kind of like disrespectful to women, and see a man would make a bed and all that. And she said, yeah, but women need to see this because this is what a lot of people go through.
Right.
So that was the hardest for me to wrap my head around as an actress, because I felt that Bobby had come from such, you know, extenuating circumstances. She was a tough cookie.
Yeah.
And but it just goes to show, you know, when it comes to love and your heart, everyone is vulnerable.
Mm,
Bobby's always been, you know, the earth mother, the nurse, you know, believes in love, believes in romance. Very kind, kind of a girl, still a girly girl. I mean, look at me with this hair at my age. It's like crazy. But, you know, the character is the character.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And Bobby is as difficult as her life has been, and it's challenging. She's still soft. She's not hard.
Yeah.
She's not bitter. She's not angry.
Yeah.
And she's given a lot, and a lot has been taken from her. You know, losing BJ and has had some really hard things. Her brother, her parents were not available to her, but yet she has a big heart, and she still sees the world, you know, as a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And I always loved the difference between that. Luke was always, everybody's out to screw you, and Bobby was like, no, people are loving, they're kind, you know, they're generous, be good.
Yeah.
I love that to show that you can have two people come from the same family and have very different takes and very different functionality on how they live their lives.
Yes.
And I learned that as a mother. I mean, when I had my real life daughters and they come out, like Cassidy's one way and Lacey's completely the other way.
Yeah.
Not only in, you know, looks, but in personality.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Lacey said to me once when she was little, she goes, Mommy. She's got brown hair. Lacey, I call her my white meat, my dark meat girl. Because Cassie's like blonde hair, big blue eyes, white skin.
Yeah.
My body, like right. Short, boobs, you know, curvy, 5'3". And Lacey looks like a Victoria's Secret model. Tall, thin, model body, that olivey skin,
yeah.
Long brown hair. You know, can pull a dress off the rack and you know it's going to look gorgeous. She doesn't even have to try it on. So when she's little, she says to me one day, Mommy, who's prettier? Cassidy or me? And I say, well, you know, first it's what's in the heart. It's not all about the looks.
Right.
But looks-wise, some people are going to think Cassidy's prettier and some people are going to think you're prettier. It's type. You look completely different. Right. So there's no competition.
Sure.
You know, you're never going to date the same guy because the same guy isn't, you know, if he likes one of you, he's going to go after the other one. So don't worry about it, honey. So she goes, yeah, but they sure do like that blonde hair. I said, well, yeah, but Cindy Crawford is the most famous model right now, and she has brown hair just like you. Oh. So, lo and behold, like literally the next week, I'm in the lounge at the airport, and who's sitting right next to me in the lounge to get on a flight? Red Eye, Cindy Crawford. I'm like, wow. Now, Cindy Crawford lived with Randy Gerber in our neighborhood in the Malibu, but she wasn't a girlfriend. I'd see her in, like, in Coogies and the stuff, you know, sure. But I was going to, like, ever go up and talk right. to her. So she's sitting there, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to bug her. I'm just leaving her. When we get on the plane, she's literally sitting in the seat right in front of me. And, you know, and so I'm looking for a magazine with a picture of Cindy Crawford. I'm like, I can't find, you know, there's no women's magazines. I'm like, excuse me, Miss Crawford. She turns around. She goes, oh, I know you from the neighborhood. I've seen you on your show. And I'm like, oh. Now I'm like,
perfect.
Okay, good, perfect. Yeah. I said, so I tell her the story about Lacey. You know, Cindy Crawford's the most famous model and she has brown hair. So she drew a picture. I said, I'm looking for a magazine picture. I haven't got one. I can't find. She drew a picture of a woman with curly hair, stick figure, to Lacey, you know, with love from Cindy Crawford.
Wow.
And Lacey kept that in her bedroom for like, I don't know, till we moved out of that house.
That's
it was
awesome.
Like on the mirror on
amazing.
Her wall. So
that's
how sweet was that?
That's amazing.
So sweet.
I love that.
And I, even throughout the years that you worked here, you still have been able to do other things as well.
Yeah.
And so, and any highlights from those?
A lot. Well, a few films. You know, it was, the film thing, not that I don't like working in the movies, but it takes so long. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we fly by the seat of our pants here.
Yeah.
You know, we do our, and on those days, 35 to 50 pages a day when I was on every day. I mean, it was
right.
a lot. When you came on, you worked a lot really fast. You were on like every day, and I was on every day. I remember you were working, and I was like, oh, Steve Burton's here. Like, every time I'm here, Steve Burton's here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But a lot of people didn't work 5 a week, but people that were on regular would work 3 a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was like, it was just.
You were used to that pace.
Used to the pace, yeah.
Yeah.
And I always had a pilot out clause in my contract.
Yeah.
But they always gave me great incentives to stay, which made me really happy. Like when I raised my children and I worked every day, but they got to a point where they would arrange for me to get out so I could see them at some point after school. I could have their birthdays off. I could have certain legal holidays off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I could be. The mom, I wanted to be the mom that showed up. If you miss
sure,
your kids,
yeah.
you know, you miss it. So that worked out really well. Now, like, I work a lot. I mean, I work on my GH, you know, maybe 3 times a month I'm in here. But I do The Bay,
oh, right.
On which is on Prime Video and Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've been
mm-hmm.
doing that now for, 6, 7. I was doing that. It was Lacey's first year in college, and we're in San Diego, and it's in July when the parents come on the you know, campus.
Yeah.
And my phone rings and it's Tristan Rogers. And he's like, I'm doing this, you know, show. Gregory Martin is our, he's been on GH sometimes. And would you be interested in coming on our show? I said, you're doing it? And he goes, yeah. And I said, so who? He goes, oh, Mary Beth Evans is doing it. And he's naming like all these great
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
I said, yeah. He said, all right, can Gregory call you tomorrow and you can talk about the part? So Gregory called me and I said, yeah, I'll do the show.
Sure.
So I'm doing that now for 8 years.
Wow.
Wow.
And we're on our fifth season, and he just told me the other day we're going to be on in Australia. They picked up our regular TV.
Hey. Regular TV. There
regular
you go.
TV.
Good.
So I said to him, oh, will they catch up? Because we got fucked. Because when I was working with Rick Springfield, his mom was in Australia.
Yeah.
And it took, they were like 2 or 3 years behind.
Yeah.
She had to wait like a couple years before she could see him
sure.
on TV.
Yeah.
So we were shooting up, Santa Ynez last week at a ranch. We shoot up there. It's all location. There's no studio.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's film to me because it's all, you know, digital cameras.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a different way of working, but I really, but also we move fast. It's not like diddle around and take a whole day on, you know, two pages.
Yes. Right. Shoot, of course.
We move.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do that, and I do a decorating show where I
co-host
called Make This Place Your Home, and it's all locations in the United States, again, and we're a sponsor-based show, but it's fun, and I love decorating.
Yeah,
so that's great. That's been a,
does,
you know,
every place turn out lavender?
No more lavender. It's out right now. Gray was the big thing last year,
Totally.
A touch of pink. Yeah, now this year, you know, it's, you got to keep up.
Yeah, you got to keep up. Well, you're talking to the wrong guys.
Yeah.
That's why they have house.
Yeah.
And so if I can say something before, because I know I can tell you're getting ready to close up in the show. We have an event coming up for leukemia research.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, my dad had leukemia. And passed away of it at the age of, was diagnosed at 53 and gone at 54.
Ooh,
in those days, we did not have the research that we have now. And now we have incredible, you know, we can do incredible things.
Yeah.
Leukemia is no longer necessarily a death sentence for people. So anyway, we have an event fundraising. We're doing this every year. It's the 31st year.
Wow.
At the Marriott Marquis in Times Square in New York.
Yeah,
really?
On Monday night, November 18th.
Monday night, November 18th. Where can people go to get the information?
So what kind of event is it? Is it
it's great.
Singing, dancing? Is it a
Broadway show people? That's why it's on Monday night.
Love
the Broadway show people come in and they sing.
Amazing.
And it's like whoever will show up, and it's always amazing people because they've been so supportive. Everybody does one or two songs.
Yeah.
It's like the most incredible show. And, you know, some of the soap people pop by. I mean, that's getting harder because
There's no soap anymore
in New York.
Yeah.
But a lot of anybody for here, they're back and forth.
Right.
And some of them didn't move. So we get a lot of support, and it's early in the evening. It's like after work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, where can they find information on
go that? Online. Jane Alyssa. Okay.
JaneAlyssa.com.
And then on her website, it's Hats for Health. All the money gets donated.
Hats for Health.
So just click on that on the website and they'll give you a ticket. It's not an expensive ticket. It's not even what we started doing since it's Monday night. It's, I don't even think it's like a dinner this year. It's like coffee and desserts and crudité.
Yeah.
So it's because all the money goes into the not get spent on food.
Right.
And
it's
in the Marriott Marquis. I mean, what's that
all
like?
That's amazing.
It's fabulous.
We used to stay there for the Emmys sometimes.
It's nice there.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's nice there.
Oh, man.
Well, wonderful. And you're on social media, right?
I am.
People can find you there. I'm sure anybody that knows you has found you already, but just in case, what's your Jackie Zeman or at Jack?
On Twitter, it's at Jackie Zeman,
right.
J-A-C-K-I-E, Zeman.
Right.
And on Instagram, it's at Jacqueline, which is Jacklyn.Zeman.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Jackie, this has been amazing.
This is so great.
I mean, what? I'm waiting for the movie.
I know.
I'm waiting for the movie.
Yeah.
This is a movie. This is a Lifetime movie.
What's going to happen is people are going to listen to this, and maybe some people knew some of these details that we didn't, but we're going to come back, and we're gonna hone in on a few of these stories and either just go into more detail on another podcast or write a freaking movie.
Yeah. I have lots more stories.
I'm sure you do, but we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back anyway.
Thank you.
Yes. So
thank you so much, Jackie.
What a life, dude.
Dude, this is why we do this, because
oh my God.
I had no idea.
What?
Wait, first of all, we glossed over a lot of
things. You said this during the episode, but like—
No, I know, but still.
Like, I mean, I wanted to lean into every single one of those things.
Well, of course, but—
Jackie Zeman, P.I.? What?
Totally.
I had no idea.
Pre-med, P.I., Playboy Bunny?
Well,
at the club when it was like, that was— the place to be.
All from the ages of like 15 to 19.
That's amazing. What a 4-year span.
Pre-med.
She crushed it.
Dancing in the, like.
Crushed it.
Dancing in Caracas.
Caracas. And then on and then all the soap operas. And
going
then you ask her the weird question about the love scene. That was awkward.
I'm sorry.
That was awkward.
But thank you.
That was awkward.
But
the one thing you're going to ask about live TV and you go, oh, the love scenes must be amazing.
No, not amazing.
Freaking pervert.
They must be weird. Because like here we get to edit them and like.
That's just so funny that that's the first thing that you thought of during when she's telling us that.
Well, because here's what I was thinking about.
Okay.
When she's talking about like being
You're still thinking about the Playboy Bunny.
Shut up. No, like when you have to like either stretch for time or go faster, like Shut up. No.
You're so stupid.
In my brain, I can imagine, like, with my words, thinking through that.
Sure.
But if you have
not with your actions.
But if you have certain certain choreography in certain, like,
sure, you just throw a couple extra kisses in there, dude. What's the problem here? What's the problem?
I don't know. It's just like I.
If they touch your foot, you're done.
Right.
If they don't, you just keep kissing.
I just yeah. It just
make
like,
it look good.
Yeah.
You're such an amateur at love scenes. I understand.
I know.
I mean, you can't even like, but just roll around extra on the bed. It's not a big deal.
Okay, fair enough. I just yeah. I don't know. I just for some reason that like I wouldn't know what to do.
You poor guy. It's okay, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'll get you a mannequin and we'll rehearse.
That one that was in Franco's apartment?
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
That rubber guy?
Yeah.
What is that guy? Isn't that guy isn't that supposed to be like someone that you kick or punch, or is it a model to hang clothes on? What is it?
I don't know, dude. Are you really asking me these things?
Well, I know. Okay.
Anyway, enough about the rubber guy in Franco's. Okay, Jackie was amazing.
Oh, she was. Just great.
And we'll have her back because there's more stories that we just glossed over. So anyway.
I know. She just kept going from story.
I know.
I couldn't believe it. Anyway. All right. Well, that's another great episode.
Another great episode. Yeah. And what do we got coming up, dude?
Dude, well, it's in November. We got Detroit and Nashville. So if there's any tickets left for Nashville, check them out.
Check them out. January is on sale now.
Our new 2020 tour in partnership with the Sandy Roman Ovarian Cancer Foundation, sandyovarian.org, for
That's
more
right.
information on
Go check
their
that out.
Amazing work.
February is released.
Yeah, January and February is released. So January is Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, right?
Virginia. Yeah.
There was one more.
Yeah. That was one more.
And then February is Texas. So Dallas,
Tejas,
San Antonio. Somebody, I sent out an email to our people and someone wrote back, come to Austin. I'm like,
you know what's funny though that you say that? What? I actually looked at Austin.
Oh, did you?
I'm like, I think we might have been able to do Austin, but it's not that far of a drive.
It's an hour. It's like an hour and. Hour and 20.
Okay.
To
well,
San Antonio.
That's or less than I drive to work each way every day.
It's between Dallas and San Antonio.
So, friends out there in podcast land, let me just tell you something. Let me show you something.
Is that Fire Marshal Bill?
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Yeah. Listen, when people say come to a city less than 2 hours away from them and we're in a city 2 hours away from them. Please just drive.
Well,
because people are like, oh, I had to drive 3 hours, which is great, and we love
and
that.
We love
and
it.
It's amazing,
and we get that. Like on, you
we
know,
get
and
it,
I, and we know sometimes we're coming on a Tuesday night, and so it's. Like,
I know it's tough.
So it's hard to get.
But Austin, lady, get in your car and drive.
Yeah,
and come see us.
Because as much as we would
get you an extra tight hug.
As much as we would like to get to every single city in America and North America for that matter, because we'd like to hit some Canadian cities as well.
Yes, we would.
It's just not always feasible for us. So we try to go to a place that is as well located to many areas
as possible. Yeah.
So you might live an hour from a city, but we're thinking about you when we come to that city.
Sure.
You know, so you're always in our hearts and in our minds.
Oh, that was a sweet way to end this episode.
Yeah. But February is, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio,
San Diego,
San Francisco, Sacramento.
Yep.
And our newly announced March dates are Oklahoma City and Kansas City. Very exciting.
We got some May dates coming up, and then guys, we got so much left for 2020. Hope you're excited, because boy, are
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for tuning in.
Remember to check out everything at StoneColdAndTheJackal.com for tour dates and merchandise and any other fun stuff you might be looking for. I don't know what else. We gotta put more fun stuff up there.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
All right, so, guys. Thanks.
Thank
Have
you, guys.
A great
day. Talk to you next week.
If you like our show, you're going to love Adulting Like a Mother Father. Join partners and new parents Daniela Monet and Andrew Gardner every week as the duo navigates all things adulting, health and fitness, to finances and romance.
All while balancing their careers and a new baby. Listen along as they chat with experts, celebrities, and friends. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss Adulting Like a Mother Father every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.